This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Hello and welcome to Tracks from the Edge, the show on Trek.fm where we provide audio commentary for every episode of Star Trek Discovery and its spin-off-y type of things.
It's spin-offers. It spins. It's off-spinnings.
Yeah. In this particular episode, we are going to be recording a commentary for Star Trek Short Treks Season 2, Episode 1, Q&A.
I love it when they title an actual episode of a thing something that should be the title of a special feature.
Or the title of an episode starring John DeLancey.
If they had done an episode called Q&A, I would have been 100% on board for that.
It's kind of surprising that they didn't when you think about it.
Yeah, it is weird.
So, I'm Mike.
I'm Max.
And yeah, I guess we should just do the... I mean, I was not expecting to be here tonight talking to you about a new episode of Star Trek.
I was.
You were? Okay.
Prove I wasn't. Whatever.
I'm happy because new Star Trek. I was like in a car driving back from Michigan and, you know, all this stuff was going on. These panels were going on and like I'm getting like messages from Justin and, you know, Chrissy and stuff like that saying like, oh, new episode of Short Treks available now. And I'm like, what? I can't watch it. I'm in a car. When I got home, I was just like, there's too much here to catch up on. I can't. I give up on Star Trek. I missed an hour and a half worth of panels. I'm completely lost now. I don't understand what's going on in the franchise anymore. I'm just going to throw in the towel and start watching Doctor Who instead because it seems easier. It seems less confusing.
That is untrue, but I'm on board.
Okay. So, yeah, I guess how about we just record a commentary here for this thing, and then as we go along, hopefully we'll hit news, and if we don't hit anything by the end, then we can talk about it afterwards for a few minutes and then go on our merry way. So I just want to preface this by saying there's something wrong with the CBS All Access app or this episode itself or something, but there's no subtitles, at least for me. So hopefully we'll be able to remember what they were saying, but if we don't, sorry. And that's about it. For those people not familiar, we watch the episode and talk about it. You can watch the episode along with us if you want, but if you don't want to, that's fine. And are you ready, Max?
I'm just checking to see if I have subtitles.
Oh, okay.
I do not.
Ha ha. See? I told you.
Well, I didn't think you were lying. I was just checking.
No. At first I thought it was because like my Apple TV updated its software, but then like I went over to Runaway, the best Short Trek, and maybe the best episode of Star Trek, just in general, short or long, and it had subtitles. So I figured there was something wrong with this particular episode. you know.
I think they just haven't got subtitles on it. And probably because they were like, oh man, we're going to get heat from Gilbert and Sullivan. We're blowing all their lyrics. People are going to know how to sing this song now. And that's like our one thing. No one knows how to sing this song except for apparently Rebecca Romaine and Kelsey Grammer. So,
oh wait, no, isn't that the song that Data sings in Insurrection?
He doesn't do the whole thing.
Okay. I don't know. I just assumed that what happened was, you know, they were like, oh, we're going to release that short track further down the line. And then, you know, Alex Kurtzman's up on stage and he's like, the first short track is available online right now. And there was some guy at CBS in some like control room who was like, what? Oh my God. And then he, you know, just threw it up there right away. And he's like, oh, I forgot the subtitles.
Sure. Okay. Let's go with that hypothesis. That seems as plausible as any other scenario.
Cool. All right. So you ready to start this up?
Oh, yeah. I've been ready for a while.
Okay. Then we're going to start at zero on the counter, and we're going to give a countdown, and we will start this up in 3, 2, 1, start. Oh, there's the blueprinty thingy. And they have fun with the short treks things. They're not so like stoic or whatever as they are with the rest of the series. You know, here it's like an elevator and then there's a spark and it goes out. And then it's really cool when they drop out the light behind it and you can see like kind of like how the titles are constructed anyway. So this is the episode that was written by Michael Chabon and directed by Mark Pellington. We've talked about both of those people quite a bit, and now we finally get to see Mark Pellington's take on the world of Star Trek. I mean, I guess it does kind of, I need to go back, but it does kind of remind me of like some of the direction in Arlington Road, like at the beginning. See, you don't like that movie. This is weird.
No, it's not that I don't like it. It's that I just recognize that it is bananas.
Oh, it's like, a crazy movie.
It is.
That's why I love it.
It is a cartoon. Like, it is. If that movie just played on the Cartoon Network, people would be like, yep, yeah, this fits. This fits tonally with the rest of Adult Swim. Yeah, I get it.
Just watch like the pre-credit sequence of that movie. It's pretty insane. Anyway, I love it. And I also love Mothman Prophecies. And I love his Jeremy music video. And I know we keep on talking about those three things. Like those are the only three things he's done, but it's not.
No, he also did the one where Spock and Number One get stuck in an elevator.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So this is pre-disco, and it's, I guess it would be the, like, chronologically speaking, in terms of like episodes, it would be the episode that comes after Enterprise and the episode that comes before the first episode of Discovery, right? I mean, I guess that's where it fits. No. The episode that comes before The Cage, right? So, okay. Yes. So here in this shot, which is another one of those things which everyone keeps on complaining about with like the turbolifts being in like the hollow Enterprise or whatever, the music that was playing, I was like, this is very Giacchino-y, you know? It sounds like the beginning of like Enterprising Young Men, which is, you know, the
apparently main the name track of a track from one of the Star Trek movie scores. Apparently,
it's the main theme, from Star Trek. The, you know, you know that thing.
Yeah,
and true. I'm like, wait a minute! Like I'm watching this, and I'm like, do you think they got Giacchino to do the music because like he's directing one of these things, you know? And then at the end of the episode, it says supervising composer Michael Giacchino. And then it says like music by or score by. I forget the person's name. I'm going to look it up right now. But, you know, it was one of those things. Namie Melumad. Melumad. Namie Melumad. Mm-hmm. I could be.
Let's say her name wrong a few different ways.
Anyway, and I was like looking at her credits because I'm like, that's a really weird credit. What is it? What does that mean? Supervising composer and then music by someone else. And
it means that she had his phone number.
No. Well, I was looking at the credits, or like her credits, you know, and she's composed like 130 scores, but they've all been for like short films, mm-hmm. right? And someone had the bright idea of asking Michael Giacchino on Twitter, like, what the hell is up with these credits? What are you doing on this show? And he's like, oh, I'm supervising a bunch of talented young composers who are composing different episodes of Short Treks, and then I'm composing the one that I directed myself. So mm-hmm. I'm like, that's pretty cool, you know? Why not? I mean, if you're going to do these things, right, you might as well have fun with it. You might as well get top-tier talent like Michael Chabon and Mark Pellington to, you know, create them, and you might as well have Giacchino mentor a bunch of new composers. Why not, right?
I agree. I mean, I think that's sort of the idea. I mean, that's the reason, you, like, when you're doing something like this, it's a lot easier to get people who are new because they'll jump at the opportunity, and it's a good way of like raising their own profile. And it's also cheaper than bringing in somebody for something 14 minutes long.
I guess it is. But at the same time, if you have Giacchino on as a mentor, I imagine that that's not super duper cheap, you know?
No, it's, but it's like a lot cheaper to have him on as a supervising producer than as somebody who's there on set and there in the studio and recording the music. It's just an economic model that makes sense.
Okay, all right. So Spock and Number One are stuck in this turbo shaft, turbo lift.
They do refer to it as an elevator. So like finally on record, somebody in Star Trek has referred to a turbolift as an elevator. So now when we call it an elevator on accident, it's no big deal.
Well, it's a prequel, so, you know, that's how they get away with it, you know?
Yeah, so what? They've always been elevators.
Elevators are the laser swords of the Star Trek universe. So on that pad, you know, I mean, like, he's like, what's your name? And she's like, Number One. And then, but on the pad, it says her name is Una. And then he's like, your name's Una. That, to me, is really cool because that comes from the books.
Yes.
I forget who it was, but someone named her Una as a reference to, I mean, obviously Number One, but also Una McCormick, who is a novelist who writes Star Trek books.
Yep.
And I think that that's pretty cool that someone out there was like, let's just make that canon. Why not? Who cares? It works. It's as good as any other name, you know?
I maintain that I wish she had like a more ridiculous name.
Yeah.
Because I don't like that her name is like, you know, interesting and elegant and dignified. If you have a name like that, you have people call you Una.
Yeah, okay. So here we have the turbolift going all crazy with sparks and stuff. And I mean, I don't know. Prior to this, right, like they had almost like a montage of him asking her questions.
Yes.
And I was kind of hoping that, and I guess this is my headcanon too, you know, the implication is like, we've been here a very long time, but I was kind of wishing that they would do something kind of like they've done in, like, I don't know, Ocean's 11 or something like that, where they have that montage and then you get to the end of it and you find out that he's been asking her questions for like 90 seconds, you know, that would have made me laugh. But instead, I just had to laugh on the inside. Kind of like Spock.
Yep, who does laugh out loud in this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, a lot of what's going on here is to explain shouty Spock from the cage, right?
Yeah, and him smiling a lot in the original series, and occasionally emoting very significantly when supposedly he's not supposed to. Like, there's a lot of, like, retcon jujitsu going on in Star Trek history, and this is just one more example of it.
And it doesn't really work, because we still see the cage, which takes place after this. What we need to do is we need something to explain why he was doing this before this without an explanation for why he doesn't do it after, right? So,
well, we've got a few more of these. I assume we're getting it.
But the idea of, you know, I kind of like the idea of, like, he just naturally smiles. That's his thing. And he suppresses that so as not to stick out, so as not to, you know, because, I mean, everybody does that. And I think that that's kind of a relatable thing. But at the same time, I don't really 100% buy it, because I feel like he's been doing that forever, like he says in this episode, and that that's a pretty obvious tell. And I also feel like, I don't know. I mean, it just seems like weird advice to give someone. You know, I mean, I don't know. It's, you know, I mean, like, maybe it's not weird advice to give someone. Maybe it's weird advice to give someone in Star Trek, which is all about, like, celebrating diversity and saying, like, oh, you can have a laughing Vulcan, right? But also then, does that take away from Star Trek V when Cybok's laughing and they're like, but then again, if Cybok's laughing all the time, then maybe Spock's laughing too. I don't know. I'm still trying to work through it all.
Yeah, I don't think that she's saying, like, you know, don't have an emotional reaction that people can read. I think what she's saying is, like, obviously, you know, you gotta be consistent or you'll freak people out. It's why I don't burst into song all the time.
Right. She's saying, like, you want to present yourself in a certain way in order to be respected by your peers. But at the same time, there definitely seems to be a double standard there, right? Like, it's okay if this guy laughs, but it's not okay if you laugh. I mean, I don't know. It's weird. Maybe I'm misreading what she's saying, because I will say that, like, the first time I watched this, I was like, is she saying this thing? And the second time she watched it, I thought she was saying the opposite. So maybe I'm misreading this stuff.
I don't think that she's saying, like, this isn't like a racial stereotype thing. She's not saying, like, oh, I can't think of a racial stereotype that would work for this.
Well, but, I mean, it is kind of that. She's like, people aren't used to Vulcans laughing, so you might want to take that into account.
You're a Russian. You shouldn't giggle at puns, I assume, because Russians are serious, is a stereotype I'm familiar with from Rocky films. Like, that would be an example of that, and that would theoretically be compatible. I don't think that's what she's saying. I think she's saying, you know, your thing is being logical and consistently logical, so don't throw this in people's faces, because they'll be like, well, what's the deal with Spock? He's occasionally, like, drops a giggle.
And yet he does still. Right?
He does. He does. But he's a little bit more careful about it as time goes on. Mm.
So, yeah. These episodes are short. And here we are at the end of it now. I'm assuming that Dr. Robert Chabon is somehow related to Michael Chabon. But Mark Pellington...
What are the odds of that? That's crazy.
I know. Okay, so some interesting credits in here. I mean, obviously, you got the Rebecca Romaine and the Ethan Peck and the Anson Mount, and kind of a surprise that Anson Mount's in it when you think about it. You know, I don't think anyone was really expecting that, because, you know, the two of them stuck in the elevator and all that stuff. But coming up, some interesting stuff. For example, the voice of the computer is Jeanette Goldstein.
Yeah, that freaked me out. I was like, what? What are you? What? How is why isn't that a bigger deal?
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge.
I put it up on Twitter, and you know, a few people were like, "Hey, you know," a lot of people sent like Vasquez gifs and stuff like that. But it's cool, and I mean, you figure going forward, like that's it, right? She is the voice of the Enterprise.
Seems solid. I mean, she seems to nail the voice. It sounds very Enterprise computery, and
yeah.
I mean, it would be fun to see her around at Star Trek conventions.
Well, she already can be because she's in Star Trek Generations.
Yeah, we don't really talk about that.
I talk about Star Trek Generations all the freaking time. But yeah, she plays like the, I want to say the communications officer on the Enterprise B. But yeah, no, for those people who don't know who Jeanette Goldstein is, she's a staple of James Cameron movies. It's probably what she's most famous for. She played Vasquez in Aliens, and she played John Connor.
She was also a vampire in Near Dark.
In Near Dark, yes. And she played John Connor's foster mom in Terminator 2, and she played the mom...
The T-1000 in Terminator 2?
Well, yes, technically. And in Titanic, she played the mom of the kids, you know, where they're like, when do we get to go up, Mom? And she's like, once they're finished putting the first class passengers on board, then we get to go up. That was her.
So, you know, she dies a lot in James Cameron movies.
I guess there is a pattern there. But, you know, well, so yeah, that's Star Trek Short Trek. So now, did you watch the trailer for Discovery Season 3?
I did. I watched the trailer for Discovery.
Yeah. And what'd you think?
I thought, yeah, that seems about right. That seems like what I expected. You know, they're going to introduce some things very gradually, and there's going to be a period where Michael and the rest of the Discovery crew are separated.
A whole year, apparently. That's kind of interesting.
It doesn't seem like that much.
Well, not cosmically, you know, but I mean, it's kind of an interesting thing. They show that thing where like her hair is like changing styles, you know, and then in the end, yeah, she's got braids. I thought the trailer looked cool. I mean, it was weird because like, I guess we kind of assumed like the Federation would be there somehow or another, right? But like,
no, I didn't. I thought there's a very good chance that the Federation is long past.
But
I
mean, but then they have like, they're like, here's the Federation flag, and it's got like six stars on it or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, and then at one point they go and they're on like the Trill home world and stuff like that. Someone pointed out,
oh, is that where they were?
Yeah, yeah. Then they said, and Alex Kurtzman said it too. They're like, we're really gonna get into the Trills here. And then there was like something about like,
finally someone's gonna.
Yeah. And they had a thing, if you look, there's like a, when like a whole bunch of like people are like running, like attacking something, there's some weird aliens, and there's Andorians all over the place. I don't know, my wife said she thought she saw an Enar. I don't know. But there's a Morn. There's a Morn running through a battlefield, so that's pretty cool.
Well, what is his alien?
There's a name for it. Name. I have no idea what it is. I just call them Morns.
Okay. There's got to be a better word for that.
I can't think of one off the top of my head.
It's also got to be a Cheers reference somehow.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I think it looked cool. I'm definitely looking forward to season 3, and it does really feel like kind of an afterthought, doesn't it? I mean, it's like, well, there's Picard, there's Lower Decks, and oh yeah, and Discovery's still doing its thing.
Yeah, I mean, like at the same time, like I do think that they're all doing something that is so different from everything else that's significant. The thing that I keep going back to is I don't get how this Section 31 show makes any sense.
Because obviously...
Georgiou is all up in this trailer.
She's got to be going back, right?
Okay, presumably, yeah. But like...
Because, I mean, it's not like she's just going to be in Section 30. She's like, oh, you know, like they're 930 years in the future, and she's like... Well,
we're starting the Federation all up again.
And she's like, I was in this group called Section 31 for like a week. Mm-hmm. I think it would be fun to do that again.
Yep.
And I think they've said or implied or he said or something like that, but like Shahzad Latif is going to be in the Section 31 show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, which means he's probably not going to be in season three, right? Of Discovery until like the end when Georgiou goes back or something. I don't know.
Who? I mean, I don't get it. Like, this is the thing. This is the one, like, outlier I can't make any sense of. It's like, Georgiou is there. She's in the Section 31 show. Like, knowing that the Section 31 show is happening and seeing that trailer is very strange because it doesn't quite make sense. It really seems like Georgiou has to just be in the distant future as opposed to just the medium distant future. I don't know. It's bananas.
Just got to get back in time, right?
Nope.
I think that's what's going to happen.
Or they just, you know, go back in time and the like in the Discovery timeline from season two and save Georgiou from the Shenzhou disaster and, you know, whatever. Who cares? Time travel nonsense. Who cares?
Yeah. All right. Well, whatever. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Discovery, and the best place to do that is in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at TrekFM or send us an email using the contact form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and choose The Edge. Max, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm at JMaxHagel on Twitter, and I'll probably start using my Instagram soon, but I don't remember the name of that.
Yeah, I don't really use Instagram ever either, unless like someone posts a picture on Instagram and, you know, you can't like, yeah, that's the only time I ever go there. But
yeah, I'm going to be putting up timelines from movies and TV
shows. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I saw that. I saw the one from Terminator. Looked really cool. You need to do some more of those. I can't wait to see your Section 31 timeline.
Yeah, I want to do Discovery because it's crazy, mm-hmm. and I want to address a major issue in Discovery's history that nobody's talking about, and it really bugs me.
What's that?
Michael has two moms now. There's no way around it. Michael's mom was doubled in the time travel, so whatever.
It sounds like a sitcom, if you ask me.
I mean, the other one could have died. It doesn't matter, but like, it's an important thing to note.
Okay, all right. Well, you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Mumbles3K. And you can find both of us on FilmDamagePod.com doing a show called Film Damage. You can also find us right here on Trek.fm doing a show called Tracks on the Line. You can also find me on TheNerdParty.com doing a show called Retro Perspective. We'd also like to thank our associate producers, Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Lisa Slack, Tom Puleo, Shoaib Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Maylett, Chris Tribuzio, and Brian Malosh. Thank you all very much for your support. We really, 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 really do appreciate it. And if you want to become an associate producer and help out Trek.fm at the same time, visit patreon.com/TrekFM for all the details. All right. Well, that's it. Hey, we're going to be back in less than a week with another one of these things. I bet you didn't know that because you don't read my text messages. Oh, okay. Well, yeah. So until then, be sure to stay on the edge of your seat.
Oh, boy.
I think we used that one before, but whatever.